Jobber Nation, welcome to a special episode of the Jobber Tears Podcast. As always, I'm Janelle from HR here with Sir Wilkins and Mr. Black, and we have a very, y'all know I'm excited because I didn't think what I was going to say, this was going to come out of it. We have very special guests with us today. Before we do get into that, we do want to let everyone know this Sunday we'll be at Legends for AEW Evolution. So make sure to RSVP and come out and support at Legends. Anything else, guys, before we do, just jump right on into our special
guest? No, we jumping right in.
Okay. All right. I want to get too excited. So any guests that we do have on, we don't introduce them. They introduce themselves. We give them the platform to give their little, 5 seconds promo if they want to. So our special guest, please let the viewers know who you are.
What's going on, everybody? I am the CEO of Shane Taylor Promotions. Shane Taylor himself, the baddest of all time. Thank you guys for having me.
No, thank you for joining us. So for those that watched last week's episode, I did go on a little rant, I will say. I typically don't, the boys do. But I had to give props where they were due because I feel like us as a culture, we don't always give people their flowers when they, are around. And I think it was super important, especially with, wrestling kind of opening back up as the world's opening back up, that I definitely let the viewers know that Mr. Shane Taylor himself is out here doing the damn thing in our wage land. So, guys, do you guys want to start with some questions before we get into some other, deep conversations and stuff like that?
I ain't got no questions. I got to say a statement. I feel like every time I meet a brother out here is doing a thing for the black male, I've given his flowers early, man. Mr. Shane Taylor, man, you doing your thing, man. The Ring of Honor, man, usually, we are not well represented over there in Ring of Honor, but the fact that your guys over there is doing that thing and you make it but more believable for us black fans to say, yo, they doing something because they want to change. And went out there, grabbed by both hands, said, we're going to do this. And I have to say, thank you, mister. Thank you. Because not only that, you did it for yourself, you went back and brought your people with you because you understand that you are not alone. We are an army. United together, separate we fall, man. You ain't no crab in a barrel, B. You ain't none of that, man. Nice. So, Mr. Shane Taylor, man, we appreciate you at the Job of Tears and all our fans, man. We love you, man. Thank you.
Yes, round of applause.
So, my favorite thing about you is that you broke the chains. And one, you did your own path. You created your own path in the business to where you are right now. That's one. Number two, you didn't go down the wrong path, and you could have went down that wrong path.
Yep. Right.
I read your story multiple times. I read your story actually I think when you first got signed to ROH, and Orlando Sentinel did a story on you. Mm-hmm. I think it was them. And I followed you since then because you chose to really get your life together. But it was like two main people. And I kind of want you to talk about those two main people who helped you, your dad and Jay Briscoe. How were they influential to you?
I would have to say, well, first off, thank you all so very much for that. Right. And if we're talking the two people who have influenced me the most, Jay Briscoe was there, but that would probably be my dad and Ray Rowe, who is that. So that's probably where things got confused. But yeah, like a lot of people, man. And for me personally, right, like I never want to be the story that is always just concentrated on the past. Right. Because I feel like that always happens. Like they talk about what you used to do. And I go, yeah, I used to do that. This is who I am now. Let's talk about the growth. Let's talk about the evolution. Let's talk about how I got to there. I tell the past because I know so many people who are living that right now. So that is just to connect to them to be like, yo, I know exactly what you're going through. I understand what it's like. I know what the projects are like. I know what the relationship with police is like. I know what it's like to have every qualification but not get a job. You know what I mean? Like I know what all that is like and how easy it is when you have a survival mentality to do whatever it is that you need to do to make sure you and your family eat. I understand. And a lot of people, you know, and this is not to glorify anything, like a lot of people leave the streets because they're not built for it or they're not good at it. That wasn't the case with me. I was very good at it. Like, you know what I mean? But that's like when I talked to my dad, as he was just like, I see too much of myself in you. And I know how much talent, how much potential you have, how intelligent you are. So I want to challenge you to be better than me. Right. And my dad is Superman to me. So that challenge kind of put things in perspective, like, yo, if he's telling me this, then it must be really important to him. Right. So, and I don't want to let him down. So, you know, first member of my family to go to college. My cousin Walter was right after that. He graduated a few years ago from like Harvard Business School. So he's in Chicago doing his crazy thing. You know what I mean? Like these are kids from the East Side, you know what I mean? From the East Side of Cleveland doing, you know, crazy stuff. And yeah, my dad was extremely influential in guiding me along the way. But when it comes to where I'm at now in the sport, uh-huh. you know, that's a lot of that is Ray Rowe. He helped train me along with Jerry Myers, J-Rock, gave it up one time in Cleveland. They saw that I was coachable. They saw that I was willing to learn and listen. And then they just took me with them. You know what I mean? Like trained me, took me on the roads with them, got me booked, you know, taught me things as we were going. And then when it transitions to ROH, that was all Ray, right? He was already there. And to his credit, not only was he telling them about me, but he would go the extra mile, right? Like there's a 6-hour clause, like for travel, right? So if you live less than 6 hours from the show, they'll usually have you drive depending on your status in the company. If it's anything more than that, they'll fly you out, right? And going from Houston to Atlanta or Nashville or wherever, Ray could have been flown out, but he told them, no, I'll drive, I'll take Shane, and we'll come together. Like, he went the extra mile to make sure I had the opportunities to even be seen, right? So I there's no way to thank him for that enough. You know what I mean? Like, the whole – everything I've been able to do in my career, all the people that I've been able to help, is a direct result of him helping me. You know what I mean? And so the only thing that I can do is pay that forward and continue to make him look like, you know, a prophet. You know what I mean? When he told people, like, hey, he's the real deal. And like, oh, yeah, he is good. He's like, yeah, I know. I told you so.
So when you started, how long have you been wrestling? Like, what in terms of when you trained to, like, then getting to – sign with ROH, and then I know you guys, there was some contractual
right.
things going on. If you can speak about that a little bit, just because I think it's super important as a Black man and as a wrestler that knows their worth and their value, how important it is on the business side, if you can just touch on that in terms of negotiating, especially for those that are up and coming in the business that don't know how to negotiate or know to say, like, this is not okay. Because I think that's one of the issues in wrestling, is that people are so afraid to have a voice. So talk a little bit about how you found your voice in wrestling.
So to answer the first part of that, I've been wrestling since 2007. So we're going on 14 years, which is absolutely nuts to think about. But when I wake up, I feel it. You know what I mean? So it's like, all right, I get it. But yeah, like it honestly just came from a point of frustration at the time, because, and Ray and anybody that's close to me will tell you this, the best person that you want on your side is a motivated and pissed off Shane Taylor. The person you absolutely want least to be across from is a motivated and pissed off Shane Taylor, right? Like, when I have that edge and that chip on my shoulder, I move mountains. And it got to that point to where I knew that I was good at what I was doing. And I was looking at how I was being paid versus how other people were being paid and promoted. And I go, I've been outperforming you for at least a year. I've been having better matches than you. I have better crowd response than you. I don't run in the same clicks as you. That's the only difference. And I'm not kissing everybody's ass like you are. That's the only difference to me, right? And so after a while of kind of just doing nothing, it got to that point and I got frustrated. And what happened for me was like a perfect storm of stuff, right? So it started like a couple years ago, I had this match with Hangman Page, and that was really good. And then that went directly into the first match that I had with Jeff Cobb in Philly. And then I went on like a 6-week tour of the UK and then crushed it. And then came back, and now all of that buzz had concentrated right around contract season, right? Like, so right around the end of the year. And so now my name is everywhere. Everybody's buzzing, and we get into the new deal, right? So I signed that first one. Then we get into the pay-per-view match with Cobb. We do it again, and now everything is rolling. I get into the world, the TV title win, right? And it's like, okay, hey, all these years of hard work, all the frustration, here I am now with a championship that only two other black men have won in 19 years. This should be the moment, right? This should be the time. Here we go. We're off and going, and we didn't. And it was like, hold on. I've seen the way you've promoted TV champions in the past. I've seen the way their matches have been on the marquees. People know who they are. All of this stuff should be happening, and it's not. Why? You know what I mean? And so it's not, and so in my mind, I'm like, okay, it's not my performance because I'm crushing it. Mm-hmm. It's not the ability to not work with people because I get along with just about everybody, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't get along with me, then something's wrong with you. You know what I mean? Like, but at the same time, I don't sugarcoat stuff. So as I talk to people, I'm just talking how we are right now. And in the business world, for people who aren't used to that, sometimes that comes off as aggressive or abrasive, but it's not the intention. Like, why am I going to waste time bullshitting with you when I could just say what I got to say and we can move forward? You know what I mean? So a lot of that frustration was there. And then I'm also seeing like every company that we were working with being promoted more than the talent who are busting their ass. And it's like, it's not making sense to me. You know what I mean? Like, and just like, it's like, if you had a product and you're trying to sell your product, why are you promoting every other competition's product but yours? And the fan base is buying all of their stuff, and you're wondering to yourself, why am I not moving this product the way I want? It's not a hard question to figure out. You know what I mean? So at that point, it was like, okay, I can either just be sit here, I can just sit here and be mad, or do something, right? And so that's what I did. I bought out my deal and said, hey, you know what? This isn't working. I want to restructure how we do this, right? And that was met with some criticism, some pushback, but it is what it is, right? And it got me into owning, creating and owning Shane Taylor Promotions, because if you don't believe in you, why should anybody else? So my thing was, if you're not going to promote me the way I want to be, I'll promote myself, right? I will go out on that limb. I will make sure people know who I am. I will do these things. And that's what I did. And once I established that, we came to terms again. And this time, instead of coming to the table as, you know, someone begging for a job, I'm coming to them as a business going, okay, this is a business to business relationship now. This isn't me asking you for, you know, please help me. This is, okay, you want my talent. I want your platform. Let's make this happen. So that's what I try to instill to everybody, no matter what level you're on, right? If you're in a major company or if you're on the indies, right? These are not spots that people are gifting you, right? You're an independent contractor. You're a business, right? come to the table as such. And if people, and there's nothing wrong with, you know what I mean? If you have a set price and people are like, well, that's too much. All right, thank you. No problem. And move on. Like, why am I going to sit here and haggle with you over what I think my price should be? Right? You don't haggle for iPhones. You don't haggle for anything else. Right? If they say, hey, the new iPhone is $1,200, guess what you pay?
$1,200.
All day, every day, no problem. Every single time. Right? So why am I going to sit here and argue with you about what I think my value should be? Right? If you don't want to pay, that's fine. Don't pay it. You know what I mean? But I have no problem just sitting on my couch at home and playing with my babies and not putting my body through hell. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think definitely, because like as like a viewer and as a fan, like I felt it was the rebellion that was needed in that company. Because like I tell the boys all the time, I said their focus, and it's not a shot to them or anything, their focus was basically on individuals that were 1 foot out and 1 foot in the company. Mm-hmm. And they lost a little bit of focus on those such as yourself that was in the company, that was a champion, that was doing everything that was needed to be done, and still nothing was happening. And that's why.
Why are you sugarcoating it, Janelle? Why are you saying a little bit of focus was lost? A lot of focus was lost. Let's keep it real.
We're here.
We either watched the show in Madison Square Garden, or we were at the show in Madison Square Garden. And which promotion?
It all started when we was at Hammerstein. It was the last time.
Oh, you want to bring up Hammerstein, but you know we're not going to bring up Hammerstein.
And that was you wanted to be real, but then take it back. No.
Because I don't want to focus, because take it away from Shane, because
absolutely not.
Because the thing about it, you're saying that we're all saying the same thing in different types of ways, but that was a major issue where it wasn't a little bit of focus taken away, and you ended up putting a lot of attention onto other people, correct? And you have somebody like Shane, who was a homegrown talent for the most part, who wasn't getting enough love. But the thing, one thing I got to ask, Janelle got to ask you a question for Shane, is how did you stand your ground throughout this whole process to get where you are right now? Because was there ever a time you're like, you know what, maybe I should cave in, blah, 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 because you do have a family at home, and you know what I mean?
I mean, that fear is always there. You know what I mean? And I felt that a lot. And I think that's honestly why more people in the past and more people now are still afraid to speak up. Because if you step out on that limb too far and it breaks, then what? You know what I mean? But I come from a place where I already survived the worst. I've been at the bottom. So I'm not afraid of going back to it. I'll figure a way to get back to where I'm at now anyway. Right. Okay. So I don't have the fear of what's after this, because I've already seen what's there. I know I'm in a better spot now, so I'll make it work. Right.
Okay.
So it's one of those things that's just a calculated risk. Right. Are you willing to take the worst case scenario? Is that something that you're comfortable with? And for me, it was like, all right, I'm in no worse shape now if this fails, then if it succeeds. So it was all upside for me. And the importance of making sure that people from the bottom of the top knew what was going on was important, right? There are so many people who bust their ass and deserve opportunities that aren't given, because the focus is, okay, well, who's the most popular? Who's selling the most merch? Who's doing this? Okay, granted, that's a great business strategy. You want to go with what's working. But they're not wrestling themselves, right? They need other people to help them look good. So the reason that they're moving a lot of those merch sales are because of other people. So why would you not create them to be bigger, to then help push them to be bigger? Then everybody wins. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem like that hard of a concept, right? But to a lot of people, it is, you know what I mean? But that was something that I really wanted to start to change. And to hit a point that homie said earlier, right? As far as minority talent goes, contrary to popular belief, Ring of Honor has always been a place that has had a lot of minorities in it, right? And has doesn't have people doing stereotypes or anything. Like people are allowed to
do
what they want, right? The only issue that I think there has been, but is an issue that's in all of wrestling, which is guys at the very top, like who's allowed to cross into that upper echelon, right? So that's been the only thing that I've seen was an issue. But that's not an ROH issue. That's a wrestling issue that we're just now starting to see kind of be pushed away.
So I have a question. So why did you pick the people that you pick for your promotions?
Synergy, man. We are all like-minded individuals. Like, every one of us is college educated. Every one of us has a degree. Every one of us had the same goals in wrestling. Everyone has the same ideologies of, you know what? We're tired of seeing the same old stuff. We're tired of seeing the same five black characters. We are tired of being portrayed one way, not only just in wrestling, but in the media, in music, in movies, in books, whatever the case is. Like, black people are not a monolith. We have depth. We have creativity. We have everything that our counterparts have. We're tired of being pigeonholed, right? We're tired of being told you can only be one thing because people are too lazy to learn how to promote something else, right? So that's what we wanted to do, was go, okay, instead of asking for that change, we'll be that change.
We forgot the most simple question. Favorite wrestler of all time?
Oh, wow.
We always do that.
Who's my he was spitting facts since he started.
Bro. I know he was.
Some
bars.
He came swinging.
That's all I know how to do, bro. I'm from the east side of Cleveland. That's all we do is fight. You know what I'm saying?
How was it growing up? Wait, before you answer that, favorite wrestler, like, how was it growing up in Cleveland?
Yes, Cleveland.
Right. See, this is the thing, right?
Don't sleep on Cleveland.
I had some of the best time when I was in Cleveland.
Telling you.
A few years ago. This
is the thing, right? I've lived, because my dad was in the army, I've lived everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of cats that I knew that came from Compton or Chicago or anywhere else, brought them to Cleveland. They were like, yo, what is going on out here? And I was like, yeah. It's not like people think like Northeast Ohio, it's all cornfields and shit. It's not like, bro, it's rough. You know what I mean? But honestly, man, like anytime you're dealing with home, it's going to be 50-50, right? Like, yes, there was all the bad. There was the drugs, the violence, the deaths, all of that stuff, all the stresses, all that's there, but it's still home. You know what I mean? It still made me who I am. It still instilled all the values that I have. Like, that's home, no matter what. So it was rough, but again, nothing that can't be overcome. And this is why we're sitting here now having this talk, is because I had the right people around me at the right times. And even when shit was going left, they were able to bring it back center and keep me focused. Right. So, that's how it was. And for the wrestler question, that's a great question.
You can give us your top five. I know one is kind of hard.
All right, okay, fair enough. That was like, damn, there's so many.
Always does this, man. Come on.
That's tough.
If somebody asked me, I got the answer.
Ooh. Right, for historic reasons, Ron Simmons.
Bars.
To set that precedent and be recognized as the first world champion, to do it in a way that he represented himself the right way, beat a guy like Vader, who was a monster, you know what I mean? And the reaction of everybody in that building, black, white, whatever, everybody lost their minds for this dude, you know what I mean, who just busted his ass. And you got to respect that. And then, of course, you have... But and for me, Ray Rowe is, because of what he's done and what he's meant to me, he's going to be one of my favorite wrestlers ever. Guys like The Rock, guys like Stone Cold. I mean, to be able to cross over into mainstream the way they have and be synonymous with the sport, bigger than the sport. I mean, that tells you – I mean, hell, The Rock owns the XFL now. You know what I mean? Like, he might run for president. The dude is an absolute monster at everything he does, right? Like, and I'll answer the fifth one in a second. But imagine the life of The Rock just for a second, right? The probability of the shit he's doing to get to this point, this dude is a 1 in 100 billion case, right? Like, it's laughable, like how ridiculous it is. Like, it's like, it doesn't seem real, right?
Yeah.
Like, it seems completely fabricated to be like, yo, you went from $7 in your pocket to owning the NFL to having your own show on
NBC.
I don't want to get the network wrong. NBC?
NBC, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So getting young Rock to being the biggest star in the sport, movies, like, bruh, like, you couldn't spin this story and me believe it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, that is, yo, like, come on, spinning bro. Right now.
Come on, bro.
Wilkins, let me know when you finish.
But it's okay. Wild. But yes, to him, and just then the last one.
Let's give you a heads up. I'm a huge Rock fan.
Rock fan.
Oh, why would you not be? Why would you not be?
My girlfriend is a Stone Cold fan, and she gets on me all the time. She's like, "You're ugh," because I'm a. Everything you just said is exactly right.
Says
how I feel
all the time.
You can't argue with facts, though. You can't. You know what I mean? You can try to spin it any way you want, but the facts are the facts. That's what it is. And then probably the last one, I'm going to say me. I'm one of my favorite wrestlers. Again, for a lot of the same reasons that I talked about with Ron, but I think, like, I like to think that I play a small part in a lot of people now finding their voice and wanting to speak out, choosing to really let their emotions out and finding that courage. I will not take credit for them doing so. I just want to say, or I feel as though they were able to look at me and go, you know what? Yeah. You know what I mean? And then kind of find their own voice. So, and then for the things that I've been able to accomplish thus far.
Man. You know how you spit some bars.
It's a lot. Hey. That was a lot.
Listen. He knows. He knows what legendary is, baby. Legendary.
Lord.
But can you tell us a little bit of more about, like, how did you get so good on doing cutting promos?
Yes.
Because he's from the east side of Cleveland.
Listen, a lot of my answers are going to go back to that. Like, you just learn. Like, honestly, though, and people that know me as well as they do, it's not wrestling promos, man. This is just me talking. You know what I mean? This is all of that. And to me, that's what the best promo should be. It shouldn't be me trying to give you this character, right? The Shane Taylor character is exactly who I am, right? You turn up the volume, right? And what I wanted to do, and this is just who I am, right, is take the ability to talk you in the building like a Floyd Mayweather. Because I'm a huge boxing fan, right? My whole family is. Give you that entertainment aspect. Give you the in-ring tenacity of a Mike Tyson, right? And then the social and community responsibility and leadership of an Ali. And merge all of that into one person, you know, and have that East Side Cleveland edge. And that's what Shane Taylor is. You know what I mean? So everything that I say, everything that I do isn't wrestling. It's just me. Most of the time, I believe everything that I say, right? Well, no, all the time, I believe everything that I say. And it's just wording it in a way that makes it entertaining for some while still giving you real knowledge and real shit. You know what I mean? And so that's just what people see, and that's what they connect to. Because it's not me, well, let me tell you this. And it's like, no, man, this is the way this shit works. This is why I'm pissed off. and I want to change the shit. And if you're going to help me, cool. If you're not, get the fuck out the way, because this is where I'm going. So you're either going to be in the way or you move. You know what I mean?
So I got a question. Do you, do you sometimes take a few pages from MVP book to see how he did in WWE, kind of incorporate it into your own style? Like, okay, I see how he did this. Let me see how I can incorporate it into my style.
Well, let's hold on. Let's clear up something too, because a lot of people feel as though like Shane Taylor Promotions is like the Hurt Business. But the thing is, I've heard it said. I've heard it said. So let's address because he brought up MVP as well. We were here before they were. Now, if you wanted to say that the Hurt Business is a higher version of Shane Taylor Promotions, I'll give you that. You know what I mean? But we were here first. But there's a lot of things that MVP did, and I can relate to being that street dude who was never supposed to be here and turning something from nothing. So on that level, I absolutely applaud him and can see where his lane went and go, okay, he did that, he did that, slip here, avoid that, and kind of keep doing what he's doing. And I've had the pleasure of not only meeting him multiple times, but sitting down and talking to him and learning from him. So I'm extremely happy to see all the success that he's had. And in my mind, he's a three-time Hall of Famer. He should go for his wrestling merits alone. And then I feel as though the Hurt Business faction should be in the Hall of Fame once they're all said and done. And I think they will be. And I think as a manager, as a promoter, advocate, whatever you want to call him, to not only revamp his career, but to revamp Lashley's career, Cedric's career, Shelton's career, that's Hall of Fame level shit, bro. You know what I mean? I do not think without MVP, Bobby Lashley becomes WWE champion. And it wouldn't have been because he didn't work hard or didn't deserve it. He just wouldn't have been in the right place at the right time. And with MVP there, it all just kind of came together.
I mean, it was a perfect mix because a lot of people forget 100%. That, like, he did it in TNA with the Beatdown Clan. And people forget who else was there during that time.
Joe
advocated. On top of that, you forget who's in charge, Bruce Pritchard. So mm-hmm. Bruce is
he already knows.
Exactly. And the fact that how MVP was able to do this again, it like you said, to do it in two different promotions, it's mm-hmm. amazing. Like the Bible said, though, you are the fruit that you produce. So if your fruits are no good, you can't do nothing. Right.
And it'd be the hottest thing in both promotions, too, when he was doing it.
And both times he had an injury, you know? I'm telling you, MVP injured equals Bobby's money. So that's all I'm saying.
You want the man to be injured all the time.
Yo, listen. When Bobby won the first time, he was injured. Bobby won the second time, he was injured. Yo, listen, I'm telling you. I'm not saying MVP should get injured more often, though, but like...
That's what that sound like.
It really does sound like... It's what you're saying. Like,
break a leg.
Right. Like, I don't want him to be injured, but I mean, if it's working, that's what it sounds like. You know what I mean?
Question, Shane. It's off subject of wrestling. This is boxing, because I like boxing, too.
Yes, sir.
$1 million question.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali in his prime versus Mike Tyson in his prime. You have three rounds. One is a 3-round fight. One is a 12-round fight.
Tyson wins the 3-round and Ali wins the 12-round.
You know boxing.
there would have been no, like, Ali never started fast, and I feel like he for those first 3 rounds, Tyson's a fucking problem, bro, for anybody. Anybody like that speed, and we're thinking, and in my head, right, I'm thinking 20-year-old to like 24-year-old Mike Tyson, right? When the defense was there, the combinations were there, the foot movement, the head, like everything was, he was the perfect fucking fighter, bro. Like he was the perfect boxer.
He was 40s, yeah.
And well, the perfect puncher, not the perfect boxer, but you know what I mean? Like everything was there. And but I feel like over 12 rounds, once you get past that storm, Ali mentally would figure you out and then punish you as the fight went on, right? So if it's a 12 round fight, then it's Ali for sure, but by decision. He's not KOing him though, in my head.
One of the greatest chins ever.
I'm saying.
But I love your theme song, by the way.
Yeah.
So what rap is you listening to right now?
Bruh. I hate sounding like that old school cat, right? Because I'm only 35, but it's like there's so much of the new stuff that I can't relate to, especially as I'm trying to learn more and educate myself more about different things. It's like none of y'all are helping. None of y'all are helping. You know what I mean? Like, so I try to give a lot of love to like the J. Coles of the world. I know I'm going to miss some, and it's going to frustrate the hell out of me. The Russes of the world that talk about different stuff. But I'm going back, man, and listening to like Jay-Z more. I just replayed the Blueprint 3, and I was like, yo, holy shit. Like,
replay American Gangsta, and then you'll...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. My favorite album
for them. I put a tweet out that was like, you know what? Jay-Z is wasted on the young. Like, his music is wasted on the youth, because it's like, not that they don't hear it, but you don't understand it until you become older, right? Like, Jay-Z, when I was listening to him at 20, listening to it at 35 with kids, with a business, is a completely different set of ears, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So from 444 to the Blueprint to everything he's done, DMX as well. In my opinion, DMX is my go. I understand the arguments for other people, but the level of range he has to be able to make you cry with a song about his grandmother on one track, and then to get into some of the wild shit he does the very next song, you're like, bro, how is this the same dude? Like, you were but just praying 2 seconds ago.
People don't get that. Like, DMX literally is one of the few people to have the number one album in the same year. The same year. Also, he's praying on one track and then talking about running up in your mom's crib and killing her. Right. That is amazing.
Right. Like, and then y'all have seen the video of him, like, rocking Woodstock, right?
I was just about to say that.
He was performing for a whole fucking country, it looked like. It was like...
Yeah.
And everybody, it was just a sea of, like, that is nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane, right? Yeah. So, and then, of course, you got to take it back to, I listened to a lot of KRS-One, a lot of Rakim, a lot of, you know what I mean? A lot of stuff like that, just to, even KRS's new stuff that just came out, absolutely dope. That's what's usually going through my speakers, especially when it's training time or I'm trying to get pumped up. And then if I'm just chilling at the house, probably just a lot of R&B and just chilled out music, you know what I mean? Just to bring that aggression and the adrenaline down.
You gotta have a balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, in your opinion, what is the current state of Black wrestling to you now? Like, as we spoke about, you know, we have the Hurt Business on one platform. We have Shane Taylor Productions on one platform.
Promotions.
What is your take on the Black wrestler right now?
I think we're hotter now than we've ever been. And it's, but it only goes to show what we've been saying the entire fucking time. Which makes you happy, but also makes you frustrated, because you're like, I told you. If you would have just listened 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where would we be now had you listened then? You know what I mean? But better late than never is always good. You know what I mean? So to see so many people having these opportunities for not only Black men, but Black women, for Sasha and Bianca to be at the stage that they are to compete for that championship on the biggest platform ever is absolutely dope. I can only hope Aja is the ref and we get to just see that excellence all in one ring. And
he out here booking.
I'm just saying what I hope happens. You know what I mean? Just putting it out in the universe.
We all hope that. Like, I just I tell them all the time, listen, I just need them to just announce what night it's going to be on.
Right.
Because that's actually all I want to go for. Like, everything else is irrelevant at that point. Because even seeing, like, we were all on a Zoom for the Royal Rumble, and to see Bianca win, like, tears. Like, it's just like, because you just don't have those moments.
And her story is dope, too.
Oh, her story is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And so, I'm super excited for the future and what could come. And what I hope doesn't happen, right, is I hope it's not just a circumstance of the moment in time we're in, right? And that as we go forward and things, hopefully as we progress and things start to calm down a bit, that it's not, you know, okay, now that we're out of the woods, let's get back to the stuff that we were doing, right? So hopefully this is a trend that continues, that people understand works, and you can have successful talents for many years to come.
I don't think it's a circumstance right now, because
I don't think it is either.
They have no choice right now. It's too much talent. It's way too much talent. Like, it's that old saying, the cream rises to the top, and we've risen to the top. Like, you can't deny it. At this point, they can't deny it. There's too many talented black wrestlers in the business right now.
100%. And let me clarify. I don't think it is. I'm just saying that I hope it doesn't, like as things calm down, like for example, right? You were always on your best behavior after you got whooped, right?
Yeah.
But eventually, once that pain went away, you're like, all right, and then you started to act a fool again, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't want this to be like that type of feeling. Like, this is how it should be. Let's just maintain this.
Yeah. It's been beautiful. It's been, like, really awesome that we're seeing more and more people that look like us doing big things within a business that we love, but never loved us that much back.
Facts. Right. Facts.
And just so it's like, and for me, I always tell folks, they're like, well, when do you think, you know, it's done? I'm like, it's never done. But to me, when it stops feeling special, that's not a bad thing. Then it becomes normalized.
Yeah.
Right? And then it doesn't have to be special. And not that we're going to take it for granted, but that means everybody else now understands it's not out of the realm of possibility, or it's not this wild thing to have a black champion. You're looked at just like everybody else, which is the goal. You know what I mean?
But the thing is, like, the one thing I noticed throughout entertainment in general, well, in life in general, is in the past, I'll say our parents' generation, they were just happy just to be there. You understand? Like, they was happy just to be there. A lot of them, especially from Caribbean background, was taught, you come here, you keep your head down, you make your money, you go home. You know? And our generation came in, we saw that was just like, nah, I'm going to take my vacation. I'm sick. I'm calling out. No, I'm going to do this, and you're not going to stop me. I don't see no reason why we can't do this because of my skin complexion, because the Constitution says this. And then we realized that the Constitution doesn't apply to us. And then we were like, oh, no, we're going to change that. You understand? And the fact that you saw you didn't like what you like, and you changed it. And you said something on an interview. You said, Ring of Honor became a place for payday. And to me, I took it as not just a payday for black people, but payday for everybody. Because if they treat black people good in wrestling, they're going to treat everyone well. Because they understand that, how that, yo, everybody got to be treated equally. A lot of people don't understand that. Like, yo, we set the culture for a lot of things. And you treat us right, next thing you know, you're going to see an Indian, like an Indian descent as champion, or Asian person. You look like, oh, that's normal. You know, it is what it is. So every little person could be represented in wrestling because we open those doors. So again, thank you.
And I mean, that's essentially right. Like a lot of the, and this is why I tell people education and learning history, real history, is so important. A lot of the bills and policies that have come into effect for other cultures rode the back of the civil rights movement, right? And all of the things that were passed for us, then everybody else kind of got grandfathered in along with it, right? So to credit what you're saying, like, yeah, like once you normalize that different people can be in these spots, and not only just as performers, but as writers, as bookers, as producers, as management, as whatever, right? You're going to start seeing that trickle down to other groups because they're like, all right, cool. Now you're represented. Let's get you. Let's get you. And then once everybody's there and doing their thing, that's when success is going to be at its highest because everybody's getting a piece, right? And it's not this feeling that, oh, well, if you are equal, then somehow I have less, because that's just not the case.
It sounds like you're an educated man. So what are some books that you suggest to the viewers and listeners that will kind of send you on the right path that helped you with starting your own business and get you right about history?
Man, that's crazy. Because, like, only because I'm on the spot am I having trouble remembering. Like, hold on. I can't think of his name. But I've been reading a lot of books. I was reading about the economic policies of Marcus Garvey. I can't remember all the details, but a lot of that is what I've been kind of looking at and kind of styling things around. That's why one of my moves is the Marcus Garvey driver. You know what I mean? Like, that feeling that, and the knowledge that, oh, okay, if we take care of our own and we do what really everybody else does, right? All, like, community spending and taking care of your own is something that every group practices, right? It's not a new thing. It's not an, you know, inclusive or exclusive thing. That's just simply what it is. When we're able to do that, we empower so many more people to start businesses, to build schools, build hospitals, all this stuff. The same things that people hear about in Tulsa and Black Wall Street, there was a reason that worked, because everybody had the focus and the dedication to say, okay, this is what we're doing, right? This is where we're pooling our funds. This is where we're, this is what we're going to build. This is what we need. And there's no reason why those things can't happen in today's day and age. So a lot of what I'm doing now is trying to set the base and set the foundation for being able to have my girls continue that and continue to build something that can last far past me, far past wrestling. You know what I mean? That's what I want Shane Taylor Promotions to be, is that avenue for everybody to be able to stand on and elevate themselves.
So what are some goals for you guys this year? You know, with 2020 kind of behind us and the world starting to open back up and wrestling just kind of been going, but now I think it's starting to really move.
Right.
What are some goals you guys have this year for yourselves as a group, as a faction out there?
For us, I mean, immediately, it's to be the most remembered and the most dominant Ring of Honor World 6-man tag team champions that there's ever been. I think with the pandemic, a lot of people forgot about those titles, and we want to bring them back to prominence. because especially with the ranking system that they have, they're the only titles who, that aren't ranked, right? So as champions, we don't have the luxury of knowing who our first three contenders are to be able to scout or anything else like that. So we just fight whoever's in front of us. So for us, it's proving that we're the most cohesive unit in all of professional wrestling. It's growing not only our ranks in ROH, but throughout the independents as well. I want as many people as possible under the STP umbrella. And if that name value can help them get more bookings, get better money, secure more spots, then that's the goal. Everybody eats. It's not, again, these aren't promos that I'm talking about. This is just what we do. This is what I believe. And it's just putting that belief into action on a national and international stage. So those are what my goals are. And of course, to at some point climb that mountain and become Ring of Honor World Champion, because I don't think that there's been anybody who's put on a run like I have in the last 3 years or so that can argue against me doing so or being that.
Man.
You know, they just scared to pull the trigger. That's all that's about. But, you know.
I mean, listen, people are scared. You know what that's I'm saying? That's okay. But it's all right.
That's okay. That's why you move a certain way. That's how I know. Like, you got to know. And it's like how you move. Like, with you and your boys, it's like they scared to pull the trigger. But if it was somebody else, they wouldn't be so scared. But
listen, okay. if there was somebody else that came from another company or anybody else that has put on the same run that I've had, and I've said this, right, that put on the run that I had in the last 3 years, they would have handed them the Ring of Honor title, handed it to them. And we've seen it happen, right? So it's like, all right, you know what I mean? You can, again, everything is right there, right? Everything is there. Like, I don't have to talk wrestling, because all I do is just stand back and go, this is what you did. This is what you did, right? I'm recanting history. So for me, it's just continuing to show that I am one of the best. I am the baddest. And eventually, they're just going to have to come to terms with that.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to have no choice there.
It's a hard reality to face, but reality is reality. As we said about The Rock, facts are facts.
Yep. So another question. What advice would you give to a young man? Like, what advice would you give to our people? You know, like right now, like they started out, it could be in their wrestling, just general life advice that you will give to our viewers.
I didn't realize until I was older just how important the people that are around you are. Right? That phrase, you are the company you keep, is fucking true. It is fucking true. And there's another quote that says, show me a man's friends and I'll show you his future. Right? And that's true. The people that you need to keep around you in order to be successful is paramount. You have to have an undying, an incomparable belief in yourself and the ability to be undeterred about about what you want to do and who you want to be. But also you need the people around you that are going to push you to be that, right? So if you want to be better, you have to be around people who are doing better, right? Because then you're going to want to meet that standard. And that happens in life, that happens in wrestling. It's everything. So know who you are, believe in yourself, keep the right people around you and put in the work that nobody else is willing to do. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody was running hills like Jerry Rice was. You know what I mean? But that's a reason that he's Jerry Rice. Not everybody is in the gym at 4 a.m. like The Rock was. But that's why he's The Rock. Put in the work that nobody else is willing to do and do all the rest of that stuff, and it'll take care of itself. And success then will be a byproduct of everything else that you've done.
So, dream match. Dang.
Call him a jeweler because he's dropping jewels.
Hey, man. My
what would be your dream match?
My dream match? Myself versus Ray Rowe for the Ring of Honor or IWGP World Championship. Both of us are huge fans of Japanese wrestling. He's got to go. I haven't. And he reminds me of that. to be in like the main event of a Wrestle Kingdom for the IWGP heavyweight title in a Tokyo Dome versus him, two kids from the East Side, you know what I mean? To be on that stage would be dope. Or to be, you know, me versus him at Final Battle of ROH for a world title, you know what I mean? For the world title would be dope. And, you know what I mean? And, of course, or, you know what I mean? At Mania, you know what I mean? But me versus him on a big stage for the top prize in a company is the dream.
Wow.
Well, all
right. Any last, do you have any questions for us?
Yeah.
We don't ever ask anybody that.
Yo, we don't. This is the, you know what? Let's be the first.
Okay.
Not the last.
All right. Let's make some more history then. Why did you guys decide to, and I know you're all fans of wrestling, right? But at what point did you decide, you know what, hey, we want to be able to use our voices and make a platform and see who else, you know, feels this way? When did you guys decide that this was going to be the space that you wanted to move in?
Who wants to answer? Well, fun fact is the two of them, they're actual brothers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, so that I got from the argument. I was like, oh, yeah. Only brothers can bring that out of you. You know what I mean? Like, only people that close to you can bring that shit out of you. Like,
so, I guess a little history fact. We actually were doing, me and Cyril, because we're doing a podcast previously, and Creative Differences and all that jazz happened. And we actually just tried it. We did one pilot episode. We said, let's just see what happens. And I think we just were consistent. We do it weekly. Yes, we bump heads, but it's because we love each other. We love the sport. We love what we talk about. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was more or less, and also we do viewing parties here in New York where we show like the pay-per-views and things like that. So I think having the combination of both, and people just around us saying like, oh my God, what is your opinion on this? So what do you guys think of this? And I think when people started asking us like literally for our opinions on certain things, we were like, okay, this is probably bigger than us. So right. Let's keep it going. And I think that's just always the thing we've said is, you know, this is bigger than us. We wanted to be able to cultivate a community where people could feel safe and people let that look like us, talk like us, can come and talk wrestling. And I think we've been able to do that. So now we just really just looking to take it to a whole nother, you know, level. Like we have a little network. So we have other podcasts that do sports, like men, female, Venus versus Mars kind of thing. So I think we just wanted to just create a platform for people to have a voice, just like you. So I think it started off as like, ha, 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 because so we'll just always say, like, you guys didn't think it was that serious. And he's right. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, this is real. We have a business. We have things we got to do. People depend on us.
Right.
So I think that's just kind of the gist of it. What do you, any things you guys want to add to that? Or did I kind of get everything?
I mean, yeah. You basically got everything. But I think for me, when it really, really hit me, is when people start calling me the godfather of all of this. When people come to me for advice, not on just on the podcast, but on like on a man and man level, on like a life advice, you know, come up to me like, yo, hey, what up? Let's talk, Mr. Bazzi. What's up? Let's talk. And like, I gain like a little like people that who look to me for answers, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's when it hit me that, yo, this is dead bigger than you. And people watch what you say. So be careful what you say, because you kind of could lead people either to a burning house or people to rescue. So be careful. Right. So that's when it hit me when I was just like, okay, this is real.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things was when we first started, I knew the potential that we had. Because when we started like almost 4 years ago, there wasn't that many podcasts out because it was a lot harder to put a podcast together. And studying the you know, the landscape of wrestling podcasts was mostly a bunch of older white dudes.
Right.
And no offense to them, they were doing their thing, but you didn't have people that look like us doing podcasts.
Right.
And I told them the first, I think it was right before we even decided to do our legit episode, I was like, this is going to be something because I already knew what we were doing when it came to the viewing parties. Because so we do pay-per-view viewing parties, like Janelle said, which is when WWE has a pay-per-view, AEW has a pay-per-view. Sometimes even like when we did ROH in New Japan, we did their pay-per-view. We'll do like a viewing party at a local bar, and we'll get like 200 people, 300 people coming out to watch the pay-per-view. And majority of the people that came out were people that looked like us.
Right.
And I'll never forget one time when a dude, he was just in town and he heard about it. He was like, yo, this is like the Wakanda for wrestling fans.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So it, I knew from the viewing parties there was something there. But then we kept putting out content. And that was the biggest thing. We kept working at it. And people kept connecting to it. People kept hitting me up. People I'd never met. I remember being stopped on the street like, yo, I fuck with what you guys do, blah, blah, blah. This is amazing, this and that. And it kept growing. We actually know people in the business now. Like, Janelle's going to be in Mania. She's booked for Mania to do commentary for a show. Like, it was just the brand.
Oh, you mean Mania weekend, people. Right? Mania weekend, okay.
Yeah.
Like he's like booked for Mania, and I was like, wait, what? Like,
no.
Shout out to one day. I was like, don't just speed past that. Like, hold on, go back.
One day.
Right.
One day, but it was just that consistent growth, and it's just people appreciate it more than we think it. Than we think that they do.
Yeah,
because they like legit love what we say. They love what we do, and they show a lot of love, and it's just so we can talk to people that look like us and people who don't look like us just to have a conversation to talk about wrestling and grow into something. And we're constantly trying to get better every year, improve. Like last year we did about, for a small podcast, we did 55K streams.
Yeah.
And that's unheard of for podcasts our size. Like bigger podcasts do a little bit more than that. So the fact that we've been growing and stuff of that nature, it's been huge. And before the pandemic, we were supposed to have our own show.
We was going to do our own show.
Damn, that's not the like,
we were going to be the first independent show to main event two black women. Like this is it's grown bigger. Like each week now, we curate indie Thursdays. We try to highlight different black wrestlers every Thursday on our Instagram page. Where we have other podcasts like Janelle spoke about. At the end of the day, it's all about giving people voices and putting people on, just like what you're doing right now. Because we figured out the game a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So why not help somebody else figure out the game?
Yeah.
At 100%. And to go back real quick to something that my boy said earlier about the generational thing, right? I think that's what our generation has figured out more so than the generation prior, right? Is a lot of people come in and you're right, they have that head down, hustle, just grind, and you'll be successful. And then we look back and look at the people who are successful and go, yeah, but they're not doing that. Like, they came in, helped their buddies out, they made deals with them, and now they're all rich. So then why are we doing this?
Well, you know what I mean? But like, isn't that wrestling in general, though?
That's life in general, bro. Like it's group economics. That's what I was trying to figure out earlier. Group economics. And yeah, it's just like, no, like everybody says that. Like, you work this job for 30 years and you retire and you do all this. They're like, yeah, but this dude worked for 5 years, invested, then sold his business, and now he's gonna make more than I'm ever gonna make in 30 years, right? Like the formula for success is not what we were taught it was. You know what I mean? So then you just learn how, again, and like he was just saying, you once you realize that there are different rules to the game, then you just go, okay, I'll just learn those rules and make the game work for me.
But then they try to change the rules.
And listen, you're talking all to someone, time. You are talking to someone that the rules change often for, right? The rules change, the goalposts shift, all of that, right? And it's like, okay, then I'm just going to keep running. I'm just going to keep figuring out what works. And eventually, I'm going to cover every area of this field. Like, it's just going to be mine.
Right.
It's going to take everything.
The moment that I realized that they changed it, like, they always change the rule on us, it took me a while. It was when LeBron James' boy, I forgot his name, the one that who helps
him. Matt Carter.
They made a rule where if you're an agent, you need a college degree, aka the Matt Carter rule. Because of that man made so much money for LeBron. Mind you, LeBron's
and other easy people, person. He's taking everybody. Right, he's taking everybody.
Right, but LeBron's most easiest person to market. He's tall. He has a great family. He's like, he does everything right. But yet, like you said, you get other people on. I get this person, put his arm around his shoulder, taking pictures, understand the bigger picture. Now they made a rule against that. I said, wow.
But they changed it back, though. They changed it back, though.
Yeah, like, because it was too obvious. It's too obvious.
Yeah,
I didn't change it back to, but thank God. They're like, still, bro, regardless.
Who did you make this rule for, bro? Stop it. You know what I mean? Like,
but I'll give you guys another example. I don't know if you guys are aware about you probably are aware about stocks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were following with the whole GameStop situation. The GameStop stock went through the roof. So basically, a bunch of people on Reddit came together and shot up the GameStop stock through the roof. So everybody's making a ton of money at the time. And that's what rich people do. They get in, they hit up their friends and they blow up a stock. But I seen it as soon as they found out that it wasn't rich people doing that, they froze the GameStop stock.
Bruh.
They froze it right away. Like, nah, we're stopping this right now.
And then everybody was like, yo, why? You've been letting them do this for years. We aren't doing anything that you haven't already been doing. The only difference is now it's poor people doing it.
That's exactly what it was.
The people you didn't think that would do it is doing
it. Exactly.
Exactly. It's crazy. Quick question, because me and we spoke about this on a podcast a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever see families, black families in wrestling? Because you see Latino families in wrestling, you see Samoan families, a huge thing in wrestling as well. You see a bunch of third generation white families. But do you see that happening one day where you see black royalty in wrestling when it comes to families?
That's a great question. And I feel like this could be the start of it, right? When you have, you know what I mean? People like The Rock's daughter is employed by the Fed. Like, if Kofi's sons, if Lashley has kids, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can start, like, we're at a point now where you can start to see these things come into prominence, especially the more success that we have now, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Bianca and Montez decide to have kids, like their child, for sure. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
As long as you keep that going. A lot of that, though, is like, I feel like for us, because wrestling is such a hard hustle and you know all of the pitfalls and all of the things they're going to have to deal with, you kind of move them away from wrestling. It's like, yo, I did all of this. So now you can go do whatever it is you want to do, right? You don't have to take bumps. You don't have to do all that stuff. And for other people, I feel as though that's what their family does. You know what I mean? As far as it just being an individual thing to a collective thing, right? Like, the family business for a lot of people is wrestling. So that's just what it is. I feel like we can definitely have that, and we can definitely, the foundation for all of that is being set now. Because if you're telling me 15 years from now, like Lashley's sons or Kofi's sons or whoever else's, like Devon's sons are wrestling. You know what I mean? Like all of this can be, we can have everything that everybody else has for sure.
Awesome.
I do. I think that's the one thing that's missing. And we always talk about it, how that's the missing, I think, link in wrestling is there's no black royalty family in wrestling. And that's why when people, like, even on the internet, they feel a way of, like, when, you know, we push black excellence on this podcast from day one. Have we had a lot of people push back on us about that? Absolutely. But it's the people that don't understand the reason why we do it is because there is no one else doing that. No one else is pushing that as a thing. So,
and that's the perspective that a lot of people don't have, right? A lot of people are so used to what they see and what they know as being the norm that anything else they hear about feels like they're being left out. But they're not understanding that, like, no, however you feel now is how we felt this whole time. So all we want is this space to say, hey, yay us. That doesn't take anything away from you. You can be just as happy for our success as we are. Exactly. The only thing stopping you is you.
Exactly. Any last questions or words, guys, before
we... Nah, man. This became one of my new favorite interviews, man.
He made lists out here. Look at
he did.
Shirts are on sale, correct? Shane Taylor promotion t-shirts are on sale, and that hoodie too.
Yeah, oh, this is a custom joint that I got for the guys. They haven't even gotten them yet. They're still packed up. A lot of the clothes that we get, like, we'll have a bunch, like our jackets, our stuff that I just got for us, these hoodies or stuff that I just got for us, just to, you know what I mean, just to say thank you, you know what I mean, for their loyalty and their hard work. ROHshop.com or shop ROH.com. Brand new STP six man titles shirts are on sale. Shane Taylor promotion shirts are on sale. Of course, you know, you can hit up prowrestlingtees.com/Shane Taylor, all lowercase. Great stuff there. But yeah, Sons of Savagery, Soldiers of Savagery, t-shirts, all that good stuff is there. Head on over there. And of course the social medias, at Shane216Taylor, IG and Twitter. And thank you guys for having me. Thank everybody for the support, the outpouring of love after that world title match, you know, and leading up to it and after has been super dope to see. Thank you guys so much. And I'm going to just keep doing what we do and keep making everybody proud.
There you have it. Well, as much as you like to thank us, we thank you for joining us. Because it is definitely something we've been I feel like we definitely talked about trying to get you on here even before all of this popped off. It was something we spoke about, I think, like maybe a year or two ago. And we just were like, but we always realize when it's the right time and the right moment, that's when it's meant to be.
Right.
So that's why, you know, on behalf of us, we do thank you for taking the time out and talking with us. And definitely, we love the support, and we always believe support those that support you. So you always, anything you need us, let us know. We there. Any new shows coming up for ROH that you may want to plug real quick too?
I know we're getting ready to go film again here in like a week and a half or 2 weeks or so. So we'll get those knocked out. And I think at the end of March, I'm going to be in Ohio for some shows. So other than that, no, man, we're just, you know, just maintaining until then, you know.
Any rumbles of things going on WrestleMania week or?
I mean, it's possible. You know what I'm saying? You never know. I might find myself in the Florida area. You never know. So we'll see.
He's laughing, he's smiling, and he's stuttering.
I just want to know.
Well, listen, I stutter all the time anyway, which is crazy because I actually do just have a stutter, right? But it never comes out in wrestling. It never comes out in my promos. I don't know what part of my brain I go to, but it just never happens. So
people who stutter, me and my brother have been stuttering for years. People who stutter usually know how to cut some hell of a promo. So
because you know what you want to say. You just got to get it out. And you know what the most frustrating thing is, real quick? I always hate when people are like, oh, just slow down. Shut up! Stop telling me to slow down. I'm going to smack the shit out of you. Like, it's not me speaking too fast. It's however your brain processes words. It's weird because it processes words faster than your mouth can say it. So there's a delay. And that's what causes you to stutter. Like, is because that misfiring. And you're like, don't tell me to slow down. Don't like, it's like people going, just calm down. Calm down. Shut up. Shut up.
That makes it worse. But no, I mean, you just so, you know, if you just so happen to be in Tampa, you know, just, you know, let a sister know, you know, just never know. Could, you know, could have come out of things. You never know. But we do thank you so much again for joining us on this special interview episode of the Jabba Tears podcast. Once again, we'll be at Legends this weekend. So those that want to come out for AEW's Evolution, let's see how that works out. Hopefully it's not a snooze fest, but okay. Any last words before you guys?
Stop hating.
Yeah. This coming from the same person that was now finally sees the light in how their women's division is, but I digress.
I've been talking shit about their women's division.
Yeah.
So watch out for the coffee talk. Yeah. You'll understand. But then when I say it every time.
We all said that. And I've been saying that, give him a chance though, but like.
But I will say though, shout out to Shaq for taking that bump though.
Hey, he killed it, right?
He did.
Entertaining. Even, that was the point of it.
Yeah, though. I give him that one. I was like, oh, all right, you got me there.
He's another dude, right? Whose career is just like the probability, bro. The probability of like, you go out, you're the most dominant center, arguably, in the history of the game. And then you go out and just try your hand at wrestling. And you're like, oh, I just happen to be pretty good at this too. Oh, fuck it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's wild, the talent that so many people
have. I have a quick story about Shaq. So a good friend of mine, her best friend worked for a company that was doing business with Shaq.
Uh-huh.
And my best friend's friend, her best friend, she was black. And Shaq pulls the girl to the side, was like, you're the only black person here? You get commission off of this?
Right.
Oh, I got you. I'm coming to you. I'm working with you.
Dope. But that's the kind of dude he is. Like, he would buy out Walmarts for like Christmases, and like the dude's like one of the most generous people ever. It's crazy.
But I just think honestly, that's kind of like black folk in general. Like even at my job, mm-hmm. when people come in, so I work in I don't know if you've ever been to Katz's in New York.
Mm-mm.
So it's a deli here in New York. Literally every person that comes in that has like a question or wants to place an order, they're black. And then when they see me, they're like, oh, you're the only black girl here? Oh my God, I'm always coming to you. I'm like, I'm not the only one that can help, but okay. Like, right. Just like, all right.
I mean, it's cool. Like,
but I just think that's just us in general. Like when we see us, that's just like when you see another black wrestling fan, you just be like, come here. Just bring it in.
Right.
Like, I don't know how many times I've done that. Like, oh, you, what? You like what? Come here.
That's right. Okay. Exactly.
Like a Bullet Club shirt, and a black person look at you, go, my man, too sweet you ever. It's just...
Hey, and you know what? That's what we got to do as Shane's Head of Promotions. We got to come up with our own hand signal or something. Because, like, and I've said this in other interviews, I want this to be our DX, our Bullet Club, our New World Order. Like, that's what I want to have, right? Is for people to be like, hey, STP, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I want, right? So, shout outs to all those groups, you know what I mean? But for us to have our own thing is the goal too, you know what I mean?
Promotion. It's getting more people on the shirts. Us as a collective, we're gonna buy some STP shirts as well. We'll rock it. We'll wear it. We'll continue
Absolutely.
Of course. I know you have a social media manager. I see her working out there.
Yeah.
So we'll be retweeting all your stuff as well, because it's a collective thing that has to to be done.
Absolutely. And I can't thank you guys enough, man. Appreciate it. This was really fun.
Awesome. Listen, anytime you want to come back on, let us know.
Yeah.
Just hit me up. You know what it is.
Will do. But as always, I'm Janelle from HR here with Cyworkers and Mr. Black. And once again, thank you to the amazing Shane Taylor for joining us on this week's episode of the Jabba Tears podcast. #BlackExcellence #WeAreOut.